I want to call requests through heating vents and hear them answered with a whisper. This is Columbia House Party. Jake Goldsby, what's going on? I'm Blake Murphy.
You're getting good at those.
We are recording this the week that Toronto first got snow.
Yes, that's true.
I feel like it's so fitting for this album.
I think so. It's definitely an album that you can... As you texted me yesterday, I listened to it and I just want to walk around in the snow and be sad.
That's almost always how I feel.
Yeah, but I feel like this is especially... And like we've done some like emo sad albums. That's a feat that we have one now that's like, ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm sad.
I don't know about you, but I have tried to not steer too far into the like, oh, I was super sad or angsty when I was listening to this. Like, obviously, we're joking about it and sharing some stories, but I don't want to lean in too hard all the time. I'm worried about where this one might take you.
Before we get into it, I should say that of all the albums we've done so far on this show, we've done a lot of albums I really like. This is like the first one we're doing where it's like, this is like an all-time desert island favorite of mine. So there is no way I'm going to be impartial about anything here today.
You don't have to. Our whole shtick is that this is subjective. And
that's true.
We're going to give you, we're going to say things like this song is bad, but we don't mean the song is bad. We mean if we relate to it less than the other songs
on the album.
We're not picking albums, at least not yet, that we actively dislike.
Yeah,
the issue we're going to run into this one is that there aren't bad songs.
Yeah, I think I use this term a lot and I don't like using it a lot, but the term perfect album, I think, gets thrown around a lot. And I'm not sure I quite put this there, but it's close.
Before we introduce this album officially, I have a question for you. I know that you have had a thing with the city of Winnipeg in the past.
I have, yes. We have fought in the past.
Because of a certain reference in this album?
It is actually not. It's just because they got mad at me for making a joke on the internet once.
Okay. I didn't know if, like, because of a certain lyric on this album, you were just like, you know what? Yeah, that's the city I'm going to pick on today.
You know what? I never even made that connection. It's just, that's just sort of how it shook out.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Jake, what album did you bring for us today?
So today we're going to talk about an album that, if you didn't figure it out from what we just said, this album came out when I was freshly 15.
Every time you go back to your teen years and your childhood years, I want to ask about the other stuff that you had going on at that time. And it's hard.
So this actually does sort of, in a way, play into that.
Extremely Canadian on all fronts.
Yes, if there's a CRTC episode, that's like the CanCon requirements, it's this one. But so I was 15, and I would say it was the start of developing my, let's call them mental health problems, for lack of a better term. I didn't really know what was going on with me. I just knew I was very sad and I wasn't totally sure. There's a lot of other stuff going on, as Blake just alluded to, concerning the fact that I was going through puberty on national television, which playing a loser, which is not great for a teenager's mental health.
Right in your wheelhouse, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the guy who just doesn't know how to talk to women. Yeah, for sure. and so this was right around the time where I went to therapy for the first time in my life. It was not a therapist I would stick with. It was, I would say, did more harm than good, probably. But this album came out. I started listening to this album, if not the day of, it was like the week of going to therapy, and my head was all kind of messed up. And I remember that fall, I went to New York with my parents. I forget why. I think it was just for like a weekend trip. And I remember walking around New York. The thing I used to do on trips was go walking by myself with headphones.
It's my favorite thing to do when I go on the road with the Raptors.
Yeah, it's great.
New cities, just go.
I still love doing it.
Yeah.
And so I was 15 in New York City for the first time. And I remember just walking around Greenwich Village because that's where I was told to go. So it's like the pre-Williamsburg days. Also, I was 15, so I wasn't ready for that yet. And I was walking around and listening to this album the whole trip. And it really isn't, as you kind of said at the beginning, if you want to be like the 15-year-old sad boy, walking around New York City listening to this music in the fall will get you there real quick. So that's what my first of many personal connections to this record is. So today we're going to talk about Reconstruction Site by The Weaker Thens.
I want to call requests through heating vents and hear them answered with a whisper no. To crack the code of muscle slack and tense Let every second step in boots on snow. Complete your name with accents I can't place, that stumble where the syllables combine. Take depositions from a stranger's face, paint every insignificance a sign. So tell me nothing matters less or more. Say whatever we think actions are. We'll never know what anything was for, if near is just as far away as far. And I'm permitted one act I can say. I choose to sit here next to you and wave.
The iambic pentameter.
Yeah, we will get into that, which I actually forgot about until I was making notes. I was like, right, that's why those songs are.
Yeah, that. Just the three sonnets.
The most John K. Samson thing possible. So, to talk about the Weaker Thens, I think first we have to talk about another one of my all-time favorite bands, a little band called Propagandy, because John K. Samson, frontman for the Weaker Thens, famously was in Propagandy, which I did not know when I first started listening to the Weaker Thens.
Now, the WWE wrestler that I have told you is basically just you.
See the ska one?
Yes. His entrance music is ska. He is from Montreal, but always rips on Montreal. And he wears band shirts all the time. Wore a Propagandy shirt on Friday.
I like it. I like it. More people should rep Propagandy. One of the best Canadian bands ever. But we will get to that another day, but also kind of right now.
Yeah.
John K. Samson joined Propagandy in 1991 after seeing a poster in a Winnipeg skate shop called Skate. Yes, spelled SK8. Saying, progressive thrash band, looking for a bassist. Chris Hanna, frontman for Propagandy, said that me and Jord, the drummer of Propagandy, had a house on Beverly Street, which is a crazy street in Winnipeg. Samson's mom drove him to our house one day to try out.
Aww.
We used to jam in the living room. It's almost like first person through the door who can play anything close, you're in. So we played for 20 minutes and said, ah, okay, you're in. That was it. We had no idea he was going to become John Samson from the Weaker Thens. So that's how he joined this Winnipeg punk band. They would release two records together, How to Clean Everything in 1993 and Less Talk, More Rock in 1997. I think that might have been 95, 97. I'm not sure. In the 90s. Both on Fat Wreck Chords. The band and Samson were sort of, not at odds, but their styles were very different going in. Propagandy back in the 90s. And to a lesser extent still today, are known for being, let's say, confrontational on stage. Chris Hanna loves to pick a fight with the crowd, especially back in those days. He would egg on the skinheads who would come to the shows to tell them to fuck off. And there'd be fights in the crowd at every show.
Arguing with your audience, that couldn't be part of my job on Twitter.
Yeah, if Propagandy were Twitter before.
Yeah, if they were a sports writer dealing with people complaining about the referees. Yeah.
And so John Samson, being the sensitive poet type he is, did not super vibe with that a whole bunch. But stayed in the band. They released their two albums, bunch of splits. Samson has always been sort of distant about his relationship with Propagandy. In 2012, he told Exclaim that he hadn't listened to How to Clean Everything in more than 15 years. And he never really talks about being in the band that much. Or historically hasn't. Like, it's been very much like a...
like a footnote kind of thing?
Yeah, and like, it's where he came from, but it's not where he was going, which it wasn't. But after How to Clean Everything came out, John K. Samson released a solo cassette called Slips and Tangles, which that song would end up on the Weaker Thens' second record, and became the basis for a lot of what he would do with the Weaker Thens. But throughout that time, he was still becoming very uncomfortable with the confrontational nature of Propagandy. He said in 2012, he told Exclaim, Chris is incredibly charismatic, and he thrived on that confrontation, which is an interesting combination in a singer. Propagandy would then start instituting an open mic policy at their shows, where anyone from the crowd could come on stage and ramble about whatever they wanted for however long they wanted.
What?
So their shows just kind of devolved into a song, and then
I'm picturing the Parks and Rec episodes where they do open forums right now, and like a handful of people coming up and talking about just nonsense.
And like a lot of these shows too were in like Portage La Prairie. I'm sure it wasn't far off from that. Exactly that. John K. Sampson told Exclaim, he said, there were some really amazing shows and there were some really antagonistic shows. The seeds of my real anxiety about it came pretty early. There were some really serious, strangely frightening shows. We'd have eruptions of scary moments. I remember being in Bakersfield and the people who brought us there had tire irons out on the stage because white power people said they were going to come by. So that was sort of the vibe in mid-90s propaganda shows.
Cool.
And Chris Hanna has said that the band themselves somehow never actually ended up in the fights.
Okay.
But many fights happened around them and because of them.
Certainly hearing it now and knowing where John K. Sampson eventually went,
you can see how
that's not his energy.
And seeing where propaganda went musically as well, you can see how there wasn't really a fit there for a long-term thing. In 1995, John K. Sampson released a split with a Winnipeg punk band called Painted Thin. Two of the members of Painted Thin were Jason Tate and Stephen Carroll, both of whom would go on to join the Weaker Thens. Propaganda and John K. Sampson sort of started to find themselves at an impasse when Chris Hanna and George Smolinski wanted to cover a song by a metal band called Venom, a song called Stand Up and Be Counted. And Sampson said that, I remember Chris and George wanted to do a Venom cover, and we did it, and it took me weeks to learn how to play it. And I kept thinking, what's the point of this song? It just sounds kind of terrible, but they insisted on playing it. Maybe that should have given me a clue. I remember being mystified by this song, like, why don't we just play it without all the stupid stops and stuff? Why is it in a weird time signature? Just straighten it out. To me, that was a big thing. Like, what is this song about and why would you want to play it? So in 1996, Propaganda released Less Talk, More Rock. It featured two songs by John K. Sampson. One was Anchorless, which would be re-recorded for the Weaker Than's debut album, Fallow. And also a song that's a personal favorite of mine to this day of John K. Sampson's catalog, and a song called Gifts. Really has that like mid-90s skate punk sound to it. Yep. I haven't listened to Less Talk, More Rock in a while, and it's funny every time I'm like, oh yeah, this is what music sounded like in punk rock at the time.
Yeah. Also, it's like what every basement band in Kitchener and Guelph.
I think that's what's funny about Propaganda in a way. Like now that they've become like this incredibly technical like thrash band, it's like, oh yeah, they started in a basement in Winnipeg. Of course they sound like that. The band began to sort of splinter apart a little bit, but Sampson does look back on the time with Propaganda fondly. He said, playing with these guys really shaped my writing, pretty much invented me as a songwriter. It gave me a clear idea of the kind of song I wanted to write.
Not a propaganda song.
They'd agreed to part ways when Sampson started bringing in songs that would go on to become the first Weaker Than songs to practice, and it was pretty clear that they weren't going in the same direction. A split was mutual, but they still say there was hard feelings. Sampson said, I was angry, I think, and looking back at it now, what I was most angry about was that I wasn't good enough to be in the band, and I wasn't a good enough bass player. And I think that's just true. It's nothing to be ashamed of, but at the time I was ashamed I didn't have the ability. But I just listened to Failed States, the title track from their 2012 release, and I couldn't air bass to that. It's so beyond me physically, so it makes perfect sense now, looking back, that I was just the wrong person for that band. Which, like, Failed States is a thrash metal tune. It's insane.
I feel like that that level of self-awareness is fine. And so often, like, we hear about bands that break up or splinter or, you know, split into solo projects or whatever. And there is, like, it's kind of acrimonious. And it's like, sometimes it's like, it's okay. Like, obviously, you said that there were still some hard feelings there. But, like, one member of the band after a couple albums being like, you know what, I'm not a fit. You guys need a better bassist. I want to write different songs.
So, and I could see it being difficult. Like, the Propaganda guys are notorious for kind of being tongue-in-cheek about everything. So I could see it being tough to, like, figure out where you stand with that.
And, yeah, every one of those tongue-in-cheek comments hurt Strong Gay Samson's feelings.
Exactly.
Aw.
So Samson left the band in 1996 to form Arbiter Ring, a book publishing company. Because
naturally,
at that time, he also formed the Weaker Thens in October 1996 with Jason Tate, Stephen Carroll, and John P. Sutton. Chris Hanna says, looking back on Samson's time in Propaganda, he said, "When I see how well the Weaker Thens have done and how much impact they've had, I think it's kind of neat. The guy was in our band. How many other bands can say John K. Samson was in their band?" Which
only,
I think
only
is,
a couple.
Which I think is a nice way to look at it.
Yeah.
John K. Samson has since made his peace with Propaganda. He's still never seen them play, he says. But he's starting to listen to them again, even though he doesn't really get that stuff. So the Weaker Thens were formed in 1996. They released the album Fallow in 1997. Chris Hanna put out the record on Propaganda's G7 Welcoming Committee label. There was still
a relationship
there. It's still, I mean, they're all still in the Winnipeg punk scene, which couldn't have been very big in 1997.
Go Jets.
Weaker Thens did not get away immediately from the confrontation that Samson didn't like, because people would show up expecting
the guy from Propaganda's side project to be
exactly. And then they would sound like the Weaker Thens. And Samson said that part of the reason I named the band the Weaker Thens was to preempt the idea of what people were going to get. That was a big part of it for me because I knew this was going to happen. And the first few years of the Weaker Thens were a struggle. We would play the same kinds of shows that Propaganda were playing and people would be upset. And there's nothing I can do about it. And sometimes it got intense. People were really upset and angry and would express that because I didn't play fast enough or loud enough. It sounds absurd, but in the context of a show, you can't really control that kind of thing. So the tension between the audience and the band got so much that Samson actually almost didn't continue with the band and almost quit music to just run his book publishing company. But thankfully, he kept it going.
He strikes me as someone who would have been a good writer, though, probably.
Yeah, and he has
because he's done some books of poetry, right?
Yeah, he has a collection of his songs and poems. It's amazing. Okay. You can see it in his songs that he's clearly writing from not a musical standpoint, in a
way. University English departments do not invite songwriters in to speak if they're not, you know, if there's not a literary element to their songwriting.
Fowl contained two songs that he wrote for Propaganda, Anchorless, as we said, and also a song called Letter of Resignation. Stephen Carroll joined the band after Fallow's release, and that lineup would stick for the next three albums. They released Left and Leaving in 2000, also on G7. Epitaph re-released both the first records in 2007. Left and Leaving sort of changed everything for the Weaker Thens. They went from being seen as sort of Propaganda light, as Dan Ozy once called them, to being seen as a real band. Ozy also called Left and Leaving a perfect album, and he argues that it was the Weaker Thens who, quote, made it punk to have an emotional side. Because Left and Leaving has a bunch of sort of punkier, in quotes, tunes, and also a bunch of really sad folk songs. It also contained the closest thing I think you could call to a hit that the Weaker Thens have had. This song appeared in the end credits of the hit movie Wedding Crashers, and this song was Aside.
Decisive stare, the time it takes to get from here to there. My ribs that show through t-shirts and these shoes I got for free. I'm unconsoled, I'm lonely, I am so much better than I used to be. Circumnavigate this body of wonder and uncertainty. Armed with every precious failure, an amateur cartography. I breathe in deep before I spread those maps out on my bedroom floor.
between left and leaving and Reconstruction site, which we're going to talk about in detail today, is when I started
eventually
is when I started getting into my like really going to shows period of my life. And
growing up in downtown Toronto must have been,
it wasn't bad.
No offense to Handheld, but they should not have been the band that I saw the first 8 times I went to a show.
And the Weakerthans were a huge part of my early live music experience, because them and the Constantines used to play residencies essentially at Lee's Palace all the time. So they do an afternoon show on a Saturday for the all ages crowd, and then an evening show for the 19 plus crowd. And I remember I had a couple friends just through, you know, doing Degrassi and certain people who worked as merch people for different bands. They knew, this was in the days where security at music venues in downtown Toronto was lesser or non-existent, if you will. So you used to be able to go. Maybe
plus you were a celeb.
I mean, shut up. I don't know if you can still do this, but in the old days, you used to be able to go around the back of Lee's Palace and walk into the green room, which would then just take you out onto the floor. And so you could sneak into 19 plus shows that way. If there's anyone under 19 listening to this, I'm not suggesting you do this, but maybe you can check to see if you still can. Granted, this is like 16 years ago, so it's possible you can't. But I saw a lot of Weakerthan shows by walking in the back door of either the Horseshoe or Lee's Palace. And they became one of the like go-to high school music experiences for me, along with like Real Big Fish and all the ska.
Well, now at the Horseshoe, you could just like climb through the A&W window.
That's true. The A&W window did not exist back then, sadly.
What a, you know, not all change is progress. That change is progress.
That window has saved my night more than once.
I remember the Sidekicks were here playing with Oso Oso.
Yes, we were at that show.
Yeah, you came. Yeah, you were there as well. Sorry, I forgot about that. Anyway, after you left, the Sidekicks and I went to Horseshoe to see Frankie Cosmos. And I was telling them on the walk, like, we walked through Kensington to get to the Horseshoe from Sneaks. And I was telling them, like, yeah, this place, like, it has an A&W window. And they were like, what? Like, the idea of this. And I swear when we walked in, there was just this orange aura around the window. I was like, oh, that's what it is. I think I've told this story on some podcast before, but it was very funny seeing, like, a rock band from somewhere else who hadn't been to the Horseshoe or didn't remember the Horseshoe, at least.
It is funny, like, a band that tours venues for a living.
The
notion of having just, like, a window into a wall that burgers come out of is, like, amazing.
It's great.
After Left and Leaving, the Weakerthans, I don't think you can say broke big, because I don't think they really ever broke big as in comparison to some of the other bands we've talked about, but expectations were very high. They signed to a major label. They signed to Epitaph in 2003 to put out the album we're going to talk about today, Reconstruction Site, and we'll talk about that after this. So, Reconstruction Site was released on August 26, 2003. It is, to this day, the band's best-selling album to date. They even made a music video for a song called Our Retired Explorer. Dines with Michel Foucault in some date. There's a longer version of the title.
Your Man Crush Monday Look Like Shackleton.
The album is thematically framed by 3 songs. Manifest, Hospital Vespers, and Past Due, which more or less follow the same tune. And as Blake sort of said before, they are all written in iambic pentameter.
Yeah, they're all little sonnets.
They're literally sonnets.
Yeah. Also, I like that it's very, I didn't remember this at all about this album, but it's very like Black Parade-ish. The storyline
is almost
similar to the Black Parade.
It's also very similar story-wise. And also, I don't think I realized till later that it was there was like lyrical connections to the
three. Yeah, like a self-contained story.
It was like, oh, they're the same tune and they've beginning, middle, end the album. That's cool. And now it's like, oh no, this is like really well written.
Yeah, John K. Samson doesn't do those things by mistake.
So the album begins with Manifest, which kind of leads us in, which we heard at the beginning. This is definitely an album where the lyrics are not written by the guy from Propagandhi. Not that Chris Hanna isn't a great lyricist, because I do think he is, but like the thematic value of this album is pretty unique, I think, for definitely for its time and definitely for its genre. Our Retired Explorer is a song where John K. Samson has imagined a conversation between Michel Foucault and a member of Ernest Shackleton's expedition to Antarctica, which Samson himself admits isn't possible because Shackleton actually died 4 years before Foucault was born. Samson said that, "I think he's a really interesting figure. He was an Antarctic explorer at the turn of the last century, and he's just this interesting guy who explored Antarctica. So I don't know. I think about him a lot."
Have you seen the show on Netflix, Atypical?
No, I've seen it pop up in my like selection thing.
Really, really good show. Like a very sweet and like heartfelt show. But there is an entire episode. The lead character who's on the spectrum, penguins are like kind of his thing that calm him down, and he like draws them all the time and stuff. Okay. Anyway, there's a whole episode where he just talks about Shackleton like the whole time. And I saw that episode this week as we were preparing for this. And I was just, it's like Shackleton is coming up way too much. So this is weird.
So really, it's Shackleton week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the music video for that, as many times I've said already on the show, and I'll say many times again. I remember seeing late at one Friday night on the punk show and it being like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is pretty cool. One of the other major songs from this record, at least in the... I was going to say the Weaker Thans canon, but now that I think about it, it's more in the, like, pop-punk canon now, I think, is Plea from a Cat Named Virtute.
Why don't you ever want to play? I'm tired of this piece of string. You sleep as much as I do now, and you don't eat much of anything. I don't know who you're talking to. I made a search through every room, but all I found was dust that moved in shadows of the afternoon. And listen about those bitter songs you sing. They're not helping anything. They won't make you. I swear I'm gonna bite you hard and taste your tinny blood. If you don't stop the self-defeating lies you've been repeating since the day you brought me home, I know you're strong.
So Plea from a Cat Named Virtute is a song written from the perspective of a cat named Virtute, whose owner is falling into depression and disrepair. And I remember the first time I heard this song, a lot of quotes that I've seen about this album by musicians talk about how Samson's lyrics and writing opened their eyes to what was possible in lyrics and writing. Mm-hmm. And not that I am a songwriter by any means, but I remember this song also did that for me. Like the notion of a song that's a metaphor for depression written from the perspective of a cat when I was 15 just blew my mind. How do you even think of that?
I want to talk a lot about the influence that Weaker Thans had on other bands that I like. The Hotelier basically just like stole, like Housebroken is a song written from a dog's perspective. Yeah. It's like so similar. It's not maybe thematically, it's not as much, but I'm like that song was definitely written. They listened to A Cat Named Virtute and they were like, could we do this from a dog's perspective?
Right? It's funny also thinking about the influence it has on bands like that and in mm-hmm. the genre that we traffic in today, that I don't think I realized until a couple years ago how influential the Weaker Thans were. And it makes total sense why I like all that music and I love the Weaker Thans. But I think because of the sound, it never really clued in with a lot of those bands that there was such direct inspiration.
Right, because they borrowed from the songwriting side, not from the sound
exactly.
side.
Exactly. And speaking of the sound side, we can segue. Reconstruction Site also represented a bit of a shift in the Weaker Thans sound. I think you could pretty comfortably slot Fallow and Left and Leaving into pop punk. Intelligent pop punk for readers.
Sure.
But Reconstruction Site is almost a folk record in a lot of ways, which would also be very much sort of what John K. Samson would go on to traffic his career in mm-hmm. and the remainder of the Weaker Thans career in as well. There's a lot more addition of hear a lot of like pedal steel guitar in this, some horns, a lot. Just you could see the band fully coming to themselves. They expanded their live lineup to be like six people at this time to fit in horns and strings and what have you. You hear it a lot in a song called Benediction.
So you don't get to be a saint. Martyrs never last this long. Guess I'll never be the one to defeat desire in a song. Here's a marker. Here's my naked skin, our exhibit A. Put a small X where I lost my way.
Another like folkier tune, I think you could say, which to me sort of is, I don't know why, this song always strikes me as the most Canadian on the record, not just for like thematically, but just the sound of it.
I have trouble with One Great City not being the most Canadian song on the
I
on
guess,
the album.
I don't know, it's, that one's, not to
there's
play
nothing
the
more Canadian than Hating Winnipeg.
But like nicely.
Yeah. Really, yeah. Like I'm trying not to.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
But
you're,
you know, winter wears on everyone eventually.
You're right. We haven't seen the sun in weeks now.
As someone who spent 6 weeks in Edmonton over the course of December and January at one point, can't imagine what a full winter in Winnipeg
that's,
is like.
You're right. Okay, I take that back. The title track is what I'm talking about, which I believe features vocals from the reason I was getting Canadian. I believe Sarah Harmer provides the backup vocals on this.
The track very clearly borrows from Sweet Home Alabama. John K. Sampson was invited to speak at University of Toronto with Professor Nick Mount from the Department of English in 2013. And he said, and quote, "I stole the music from a popular Southern rock band called Leonard Skinner. It's sort of an act of reclamation in that the song is sort of derogatory toward Neil Young. It's called Sweet Home Alabama. So I thought I would reclaim it as a Winnipegger. It's part of the hidden history of this song. Also, it's pretty catchy. You have to admit, Leonard Skinner kind of rock."
Again, a very...
That is the politest way to get revenge on someone.
John Gay, and he it does... I've never met him in person, but I've seen him play solo many times. And he does seem like the most polite man in the world. Yeah. He starts every show, and has, even the Weaker Than's days, he starts every show by saying, "Hello, friends." And that's how he... Like, he's very much the soft-spoken man I think we want him to be.
Yeah, and he's obviously a huge Neil Young fan. He told Bandcamp Daily in 2016 that he bought his first electric guitar the day he saw Dead Man, which is a film Neil Young did the score for.
Huh.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
He paid it back.
I guess it makes sense. Like, a folksy guy from Winnipeg being inspired by Neil Young does not seem out of the realm of possibility. A thing I do want to talk about with this record a little bit is this idea of their, we kind of touched on it a minute ago, but the idea of their place in emo. In quote unquote, Dan Ozzie, as I said, argued that they made it punk to have feelings. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I'm surprised at how much you do see them sort of, I know the R emo people will get mad at us, but like, I get it. Like, yeah
they would not classify the Weaker Thans as emo at any point, but you would almost like that tree from R emo. You would almost have to have like Weaker Thans, like the opposite of a branch, where like a branch, someone's just like reaching in and shaking a branch.
Yeah. And like, it's so funny to me that this like sort of quirky Canadian folk band is heralded as not necessarily a pillar of emo, but definitely an influence on modern emo. I think you can see more of the specificity of Sampson's writing in emo in 2019 than you can in like Jawbreaker's writing.
Yeah.
In
2019. And I mean, for me, it's funny because like, all of my favorite bands are like, a lot of my current favorite bands or of the last 5-10 years are like, oh yeah, we like John K. Sampson was it. Like Modern Baseball referred to The Weakerthans as their favorite band ever and told Consequence of Sound in 2016 that it directly affected how they wrote Holy Ghost. Now, the fact that Holy Ghost is their worst, my least favorite of their albums.
Also, the first track on that sounds like a Weakerthans song.
It sure does. It's Frank Turner's favorite album.
Yeah.
Frank Turner told Consequence of Sound in 2015, I've been a fan of The Weakerthans for a very long time, and I think John K. Sampson is one of the greatest lyric writers to ever walk this earth. I've actually been more a student of the band than a fan. Justin Courtney Pierre of Motion City Soundtrack told Pop Matters, holy shit, where do I begin? First and foremost, it's all about the lyrics. John K. Sampson is a master storyteller. He has a way of making you feel instantly nostalgic for the thing you just heard.
Which that's a great quote. And
it's
accurate.
So good. That's how I felt all week listening to this album, walking around. I mentioned earlier that it was the first Snowfall. And we've talked on this podcast about how albums get locked in as like, okay, I listen to this at this point in the fall and I have a specific memory with it. And that's locked in as a fall album. This album has always been a winter album for me.
Yep.
But like walking around during the first Snowfall of the year, like that's the feeling that you get. It's like, I'm so nostalgic for this thing that didn't happen to me.
I also think that like to the point of this, I think I find that I go through this thing with The Weakerthans and John K. Sampson and all their music where they're one of my favorite bands of all time. It's one of my favorite records of all time, but I don't listen to them. Like I won't go through a full year of listening to them, but then I'll be like, I have a playlist that I made on Spotify last year. That's just every Weakerthans song and every John K. Sampson song on Spotify. Cause sometimes like I'm just gonna listen to this for 3 weeks. And I think to that nostalgic for the thing you just heard, that's what every time it sounds like, boy, I could listen to something new, but I really just want to go listen to John K. Sampson some more.
Yeah. Justin Bieber also said, seeing them live will quote, fucking ruin you.
Yeah.
Kevin Devine, Hotel Year, Touche Amore, all big fans of his solo work as well as Weakerthans. There was an album released called One Great Tribute, A Love Letter to the Weakerthans. It was a Weakerthans tribute album to raise proceeds for CAMH and CMHA. They crowdfunded the actual album and John K. Sampson is like on board with it.
Yeah, it's crazy how much it truly has had, especially on, as I said, the music that we listen to like every day. Before we get into sort of the future of the Weakerthans that is now the past, I guess we can't really not talk about One Great City when discussing this record. It became sort of, I want to say a phenomenon because that's way too big for the Weakerthans, but if you were a CBC listener in 2004, you knew One Great City.
Late afternoon, another day is nearly done. A darker gray is breaking through a lighter one. A thousand sharpened elbows in the underground. That hollow hurried sound of feet on polished floor. And in the dollar store, the clerk is closing up and counting loonies trying not to say Winnipeg.
Boy, is it fun to be in a room full of 500 people all yelling, I hate Winnipeg at the exact same time. Like, that is a great concert sing-along song. John K. Sampson has a quote when he was talking about being no longer in Propaganda, where even to this day, at every show he plays, someone yells out Propaganda in the crowd. Just to like bring, to like ask for a song or whatever. I feel like this song, that probably happens also. I've never not seen him play it. I think the Weakerthans got away from playing a little bit when they were touring Reunion Tour, just because it was so ubiquitous for them a little bit. But he plays it now and they obviously didn't stop playing it. But I just, it's such a funny tune. It's also one of those tunes where, kind of like we were saying with Virtude, of that, I don't think when I was 15 I heard this record, I'd ever heard a song this specific about references that I recognized. Like the fact he's referencing like the Guess Who and the Jets and the, like, even like the bus route It's just very, I remember hearing that and being like, oh, you can write things that aren't, that people might not get the references, but you can write things about like your street.
Right, yeah. Talking about the ball game.
Yeah.
Empty diners, you know, stuff that is like, you don't have to be there. You can, you know exactly what that feeling is.
Totally. And it's so devoid of metaphor in a way for a band that, for a guy who writes in such lyrical, flowy patterns. The album was extremely well received in Canada. In 2013, Ballast magazine named it the 47th best Canadian album of all time. Pitchfork, of course, gave it a 5.3 at time of its release. I'd be really curious to see what a Pitchfork re-review of this album in 2019 would look like. I have a feeling it would be higher than a 5.3. After the album was released, John P. Sutton left the band. He was replaced by Greg Smith on bass, who is now a bartender at the Horseshoe Tavern. And you can say hi to him and say how much you like his band, which he gets really sometimes uncomfortable with. I don't say that from personal experience or anything, but
man.
Yeah, the band would release Reunion Tour in 2007, which sort of continued the evolution of their sound. Stephen Carroll said that it has lots of ambient stuff, tape loops, and more keyboard. It was nominated for the 2008 Polaris Prize. It also is an extremely lyrically dense and referential record. It has songs about Gump Worsley, the Scotties Tournament of Hearts, Winnipeg Bus Drivers, and Bobby Clark, not the hockey Bobby Clark, but the ferry driver who believes he once saw Bigfoot. So that's the kind of record it is. Also, for me, a record that puts me in a place. That record came out like the week I went to university. It was like my first week in the dorm when it came out. And I was like,
that'll do it.
I can't hear the first track on that record, Civil Twilight, without being like, oh, first week of school and moving away for the first time. That's fun. In 2009.
Into your favorite city.
Into my favorite city, yeah.
You want to talk about I Hate Winnipeg? If Jake Goldsby had gone down the songwriting road.
It would just be that, but Montreal.
Yes.
Yeah.
But in French.
But in French, which I can't speak. In 2009, the band released an incredible, incredible live album called Live at the Burton Cummings Theater. It's awesome. Go listen to it. In 2010, they collaborated with Jim Bryson on his album, The Falcon Lake Incident. They were basically his backing band, and Jim Bryson would then go on to join the Weaker Thens as a live member for the rest of their tenure. They also, in 2006, I didn't know this until today, the Weaker Thens, minus John K. Sampson, backed Greg Graffin on his 2006 solo record, Cold as the Clay.
Sure.
Which, all right. They stopped releasing new music after Reunion Tour, despite everyone waiting for a new Weaker Thens record, and they said they were writing. They also stopped really playing shows after 2011. Writing was on the wall a little bit that the band was coming to an end. John K. Sampson released his first solo record, Provincial, in 2012, which was a compilation of three previously released EPs, which was long listed for the Polaris Prize. The Weaker Thens played their final show at X-Fest in Calgary in 2013, following appearances at Sonic Boom Festival in Edmonton and Riot Fest in Toronto, which was also the last time I saw them. They were the band's first shows in 2 years. And then in 2015, they broke up in the most Canadian folk band way possible. In 2015, Jason Tate unceremoniously tweeted, "Word is getting out, the Weaker Thens are done. Here's the songs we used to take the stage 4 years. Bye-bye." And that's how they broke up. And that's right. How they announced it.
Just a tweet.
In 2016, John K. Sampson released Winter Wheat, which was produced by Jason Tate and also features Greg Smith and was recorded by the Weaker Thens sound tech. And it's essentially a Weaker Thens record minus Stephen Carroll.
It's very good.
It's great. And Sampson even described it as sounding more like a new Weaker Thens album rather than a solo project. It also contains the end of the Virtute saga, and it's the saddest fucking song of
all time. Oh, no. Poor guy.
Yeah.
Poor girl. I don't know the gender of that cat.
I don't know either.
Poor cat.
Poor cat.
That's an easier way to put it.
Yeah. So that's the Weaker Thens, and we're going to dig into some hot takes I have about this album, the Weaker Thens.
After this. Before we get into the debate, I want to run two things by you.
Okay.
First, actually, I'm not even going to run by you. I really love the album art.
Yes.
This one, so it's by Marcel DeZama, who also did album covers for They Might Be Giants and Beck. It just
looks like
it's great.
It also looks like someone who designed album covers for They Might Be Giants and Beck.
It sure does. let's find a Canadian artist and let's get after it. I'm pretty sure he's Canadian.
Well, stark reds and browns.
Yes. My other question, do you find a lot of, like, I guess sound-wise, sonically and songwriting-wise, I find, I've always found Weaker Thans and Mountain Goats to be very like parallel to each other. And I like both of those bands a lot. Obviously, Mountain Goats tends to do a little more concept-y albums, although Reconstruction Side is not concept-y.
I think that's a fair.
You're a Mountain Goats fan, right?
No, I'm a huge Mountain Goats fan. Yeah.
I feel like they occupy a similar headspace to me. And there were certain times listening to this album back, I'm like, oh yeah, it's very, not that one borrows from the other. I think they just like, there aren't a lot of bands that sound like those two bands. And they sound a little similar.
I think two things on that. I think, yes, they absolutely do. And I think part of it is that both John Darnielle and John K. Samson have a similar quality to their voice, I would say. They're also both very literate and very referential. There's a great video on YouTube, actually, from, I think it's in 2009, the Bare Naked Ladies had a cruise where bands went on with them and they played. And on this cruise, this edition of it, was the Weaker Thans and the Mountain Goats with them. And there's a great video of essentially a songwriter's lecture, for lack of a better term. And there's a bunch of people in the panel. I forget who the other three are, but the main three that I was focused on, obviously, were Stephen Page, John Darnielle, and John K. Samson. And they talk about writing their songs, and they have acoustic guitars with them. They play some of their songs. It's on YouTube. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check
it out. I think that you can definitely see how John K. Samson and John Darnielle are on very similar wavelengths. And I think I've also both influenced exactly the music we're talking about here.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a tangent, but I wanted your thoughts.
I'm always here to talk about the Mountain Goats. We'll do that one day and I'll get very sad. But
we're going to want to do different Mountain Goats albums.
We are going to want to do different Mountain Goats albums.
I don't think there's any question for anyone listening who knows me at all which Mountain Goats album I would want to do. Maybe we'll do both.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. Anyway, I have three hot takes about the Weaker Thans and about this album that I want to debate.
All right. I don't know that there's going to be a ton of debate.
No, I'm not sure
either. I'm not going to tell you that this album, that you're wrong feeling the way you feel about this album that meant so much to you.
I would say that it's more one hot take and two more points.
Okay. Well, let's load the hot Jake cannon. Let's shoot these Jake hot takes off. Jake hot take number one.
Jake hot take number one is that John K. Samson is the greatest Canadian songwriter of all time. And that includes, I'm including in this list, I used to say that I thought he was the greatest living Canadian songwriter of all time.
Does that give you the Leonard Cohen?
Yes, Gord Downie, et cetera. But now, upon reflection of my own opinion, I'm taking it further, and I think that no disrespect meant to Leonard Cohen or Gord Downie.
Jake shoots on Gord Downie.
But
first Don Cherry.
Now I'm coming for all your institutions. We'll get into how I don't like the Tragically Hip another time.
I went to school in Kingston. Sorry to cut
you off. You have to.
Yeah, it's like they issue it. Two Tragically Hip concerts a year came with my tuition.
Fully completely comes with your birth certificate. It's like, here you go. But yeah, I believe that John K. Samson is the greatest Canadian songwriter of all time. I'm not going to say that he's the most influential Canadian songwriter of all time, or that he has necessarily added the most to the culture, quote unquote, of Canada, because I don't think he has.
Maybe our very specific, the stuff we have consumed over the last decade, maybe.
But like, I don't think he's had a bigger impact on the country than Leonard Cohen or Joni Mitchell or whomever. But I do think he is the greatest songwriter, lyricist. I should say lyricist, because his songs are very basic.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anyone who has been able to find that balance of, like, he walks that line of being too pretentious and cute for his own good so well.
Well, I'm lost, I'm afraid. Rope tying down a leaky boat to the roof of a car on a road in the dark and it's snowing. If I'm more, then it means less. Last call for happiness. I'm your dress near the back of your knees and your slip is showing. I'm afloat in a summer parade. Up the street in the town that you were born in. With the girl at the top wearing tulle and a miss somewhere sash waving like the queen. Buy me a shiny new machine that runs on lies and gasoline and all those batteries we stole from smoke alarms and disassembles my despair. Never took me anywhere. It never once bought me a drink.
I could talk for hours about just the construction, not to make a pun, but the construction of the lyrics and the tune of that song, just like how he syncopates the words to fit the music there. I love that song.
I am not willing to concede without going back and doing a deeper dive into Leonard Cohen. So yes, that's as fresh. I'm just a little worried about recency bias, given how much I've listened to John K. Sampson this week.
I get it.
I feel like Leonard Cohen is at the top of my list, but I would have to go back and, you know, he has a chance to defend the title if I'm going to give it to someone else.
I think that's fair. My second take is that Reconstruction Site is not only the Weaker Than's best albums, but it is one of the best Canadian albums of all time and should be talked about in the same breath as Harvest Moon or Fully Completely or
Morbid Stuff
or any of the Leonard Cohen records. I think that the Weaker Than's, I think because they sort of faded out rather than broke up, they haven't, other than, as we said, are like musical niche, they in the Canadian,
they haven't been celebrated lexicon, as much because they were a thing. And then I also feel like a part of that is that they didn't really belong to a genre. So you don't have,
and they didn't have a hit.
Yeah. And like everyone, I think a lot of people like them, but you don't have anyone, you know, championing them when it's like, they're not in the conversation for best Canadian punk albums. And then because the first two were pop punkish, and then you get into folky stuff, like they don't have a clear definition and a clear slot they fit into.
And I think
maybe that makes it harder to contextualize.
I think so. And I think they're also a weird band in the sense that they had, for a small Canadian band from Winnipeg, had tremendous success, but also didn't have that much success. Like even the last time I saw them when they played Riot Fest, they were playing at like 4 p.m.
Yeah, they were opening for Promise Ring as Promise Ring was coming down and opening for Jimmy Eat World themselves. Exactly,
and that's in the States too, where they definitely didn't have, like, I don't think they had a ton of crossover international success either. And like, even on their reunion tour, when they were headlining, they were still playing venues like La National in Montreal or Lee's Palace here. Like, they weren't even playing 1,500.
Yeah, they're not playing Danforth.
No, or even the Phoenix. Like, it just wasn't. That didn't happen for them.
I bet if they did it now, they could do Danforth.
Oh, if there was a Weaker Than's reunion tour.
Nostalgia's now, hot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that would be a big selling tour.
I agree with you that it's their best album. I would probably order them Reconstruction Site, Left and Leaving, Fallow, Reunion Tour.
I'm surprised you put Reunion Tour fourth.
Yeah.
Interesting. I would probably go Reconstruction Site. I have a really tough time with ranking Reunion Tour and Left and Leaving. They're both so good in my eyes that I have they're 2A and 2B to me. Okay. And then I'd have Fallow fourth. Not that I think Fallow's bad, but it's very clearly a first record.
I like that it's still like kind of pop punky though.
It is though. Yeah.
That does fit well with me. Like, but sits well with me. Like, I like it.
Yeah. I will say, when I have my like John K. Sampson Weaker Than's playlist going and I'm skipping through, I stop on a lot of Fallow songs because they are kind of like,
Left and Leaving is really good. I think Left and Leaving is number two. Yeah. I think for me, it's definitely number two. You could flip Fallow and Reunion Tour. I wouldn't
feel
that strongly about it, but I think
I also can't divorce like my personal feelings and placement of Reunion Tour from where I was when that came out. So it's hard for me to be.
Yeah, there are a lot of albums like that. When we get to an Alkaline Trio episode, I have weird association with an Alkaline Trio album that most people don't like. And it's just like, I have it way higher than everyone else.
We have talked about this.
Yeah, we've argued about this on Twitter before. Yeah, we'll save that.
I don't like that album. So
we'll save that in favor of Weaker Than's J-Caught take number three.
We've sort of touched on this already, but
the takes are getting less hot. They're cooling off.
They're lukewarm now. The Weaker Than's are not an emo band, despite, I think I'm going to agree with our emo for once.
They're not Sparkle Daddy or emo core.
I just learned the term sparkle for emo today. I didn't know that was a new thing in the genre, which, like, I get it kind of.
Yeah. Once they give examples of what is what, like, to me, this is maybe not something I should admit as we're trying to do like a critical music podcast, but like, I generally don't care to split things into subgenres that much. It's like mostly, and I think a lot of that is because a lot of the time when I'm talking about music, I'm talking about it with people who are not that hardcore a fan, who, like, if I started splitting the hairs of the emo revival subgenres into like Midwest and Sparkle and all of these things, they would have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, I didn't have until today. Mm-hmm.
I agree. It's not emo. I think it's just like a folk album.
Yeah, I think it's Canadian. It's closer to Canadiana than it is anything else, I think.
Yeah, it is. I would be super curious what, like, obviously we mentioned a bunch of American bands that really like this album, but like some of our American friends who have music overlap with us, like, did Weaker Thans even hit them? Did it reach them? Did they,
yeah.
Did they associate it with, other than the Winnipeg reference, being a Canadian album?
That is a very interesting question. I have no idea, but.
We should have asked someone.
Should have asked somebody.
Whoops. If you're listening to this, we'd love to hear your take.
It was funny when they broke up in 2015. I remember tweeting very emotionally about it, of course. And I was surprised by the, especially when we compare sort of the, I mean, obviously they were never close to this size, but like the groundswell of people coming out of the woodwork when My Chemical Romance got back together.
Yes.
Everyone was like, oh man, they had this many fans. I was surprised at the lack of people sort of eulogizing the Weaker Thans, which I think does happen when you don't release music in 8 years. I guess that's sort of how, and stop playing shows. It's not that, and aren't, you know, a band that was selling out stadiums and 10 years ago, but yeah. Okay. So.
So those are your three hot takes.
Those are my three. Well, no, that's my one hot take and my two lukewarm takes.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite like song on this album?
I do, actually.
I found it a little hard to come up with rankings in my head just because the three sonnets are like, I can't separate them, right?
Yeah.
Like you have to, I think, group them together.
I think that's
and
fair.
Then that messes up your ordering a little bit.
I'm curious now, because I know you're sort of coming back to this record more than, and like sort of in a way discovering it more so than you, than
I probably didn't, I definitely at the time did not, was not, this was not in my consciousness, and I was not super aware of this album when it came out. And then John K. Samson's solo stuff, I really liked. And then I went back and like obviously some of the songs were from, like, I knew One Great City.
Right.
You know some of the songs, but to really go back and listen to full albums was something I probably only did with them maybe 2015, 2016.
Okay.
And then maybe a little earlier than that, because this first one came out 2012, right?
Yeah,
this first
Provincial, yeah, Provincial's 2012.
So yeah, maybe sometime between the first one and the second one is when I would have gone back and really dove into Weaker Thans for the first time, seriously. And then leading up to this, it was like, man, this stuff, you forget pretty, like, this has come up a bunch of times as we do these episodes. Like, when you go back and listen to an artist for like a week straight preparing for one of these episodes, like, you forget just how good some of this stuff is.
Yeah, and this album, like, because I usually listen to the Weaker Thans on shuffle, for lack of a better term, listening to this front to back, it really was like, oh my God, this album's so fucking good. Hmm. So I'm curious, as someone who's sort of...
Yeah, those were all my Robin takes. This is great.
I think it's valid. I think it's true. But
another thing I have trouble with ranking is that I'm usually so lyric driven, but like every song on this album is so strong from that. Like sometimes you run into albums where it's like, okay, like when we did Bleed American, it's like, okay, a couple of these songs are nonsense. They rip. Yeah. But lyrically, there's no meat there. With this, it's completely different.
So I'm curious as to someone who is sort of coming, who doesn't have the nostalgic attachment to this record. I'm curious as to what your song ranking is for that kind of stuff without that.
Yeah, I have One Great City number one.
Okay, it's the song.
It's,
I get it.
It's great. Song for the Elks Lodge, Last Call. I had it number two. The title track, I had it number three. It's really. Mm-hmm. Really like that song. And then what did I have? The cat song. What's it called again? Plea for a Cat Named Bertuti.
The cat song.
Yes. I had that four. And then I just kind of grouped the three sonnets together
as a fifth.
I mean, then you're at seven songs from the album because of that trio. So it's basically it's just, you know, I like a lot of these songs.
I mean, yeah, it is a hard album to rank because it is so strong. Yeah,
I would imagine we have pretty different rankings for these.
Yeah. My number one is actually, it's my favorite Weaker Thans song. We haven't actually talked about it yet in this episode. It's a song called The Prescience of Dawn. I just love the build of it. And it doesn't really sound like any other Weaker Thans songs in a lot of ways.
Sirens woke me up again. I know they're coming for me someday, just a matter of when. Count to 25 and yawn. Touch the clock and turn my back against the dawn and hope for that one dream of hardware stores and checkered floors. Over the apartment's head.
it's funny, we're talking about like the Are They an Emo Band, and like that is the most sort of modern emo sounding song, I think, in their catalog in a lot of ways. And it's sort of, I remember hearing it the first time, listening to this record, and it kind of came out of nowhere a little bit, because like, especially where it's situated on the album, like it comes right after like Benediction and A New Name for Everything, which are very like nice country folk songs, and One Great City, which is just like a little finger pick ditty. And then these like loud distorted guitars and this huge build to this great anthemic climactic guitar solo. I've always sort of considered that the last song on the record, even though Past Due is the actual last song on the record.
And then there's that little fade out and the 30 seconds of
but that's always seemed to me like the end of the journey of this record, and Past Due is kind of like the epilogue. And I'm a sucker for closing.
That's fair.
Yeah, so I have Prescience of Dawn at number one. Number two, I think I'm going to put the Sonnets.
Okay.
Number three, I'll put Virtude. Number four, I think I'm going to put The Reasons, even though it's the most straightforward song on this record. It's just a nice love song.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's really sweet.
But it's also the first track after the first sonnet. And like for some reason, I always... When I think about this record, the sonnets are always not part of the track list in my brain. I don't know why.
No, that's fair. So, I think that they're short. They're parenthetically titled.
Yeah. And so this was like the intro. This was like, oh, I like the Weaker Thans now.
Yeah.
And then five, I'm going to put Our Retired Explorer, because it was the song I saw the music video of that got me into the Weaker Thans.
Perfect.
And it's a fun, literate song. Yeah. I don't know.
That's great.
That's great.
That leads us to picking one for the mixtape.
I think it's gotta be Virtude. I think it's the one that holds the most relevance. Frank Turner's covered it. Pup covered it. If we ever get into John K. Simpson's solo stuff, which would be redundant after this, we could just put the whole Virtude saga and make everyone sob for like 6 days.
Let's not do that.
No. He does now, when John K. Simpson plays solo shows live, he plays all three in a row. And it's impossible not to cry.
Yeah, that'd be a wallop.
Yeah, he was opening for Craig Finn a couple years ago and just played it. And then Craig Finn was like, I guess I have to play a show now.
Okay, well, we have Virtude going on the mixtape then. Do we have anything else on Reconstruction Site?
I'm going to say that's it, because if I don't, we're going to be here all day, because I could talk with this album forever.
Yeah, I figured that might happen. I figured
self-control is important.
All right. Man, this was fun. Reconstruction Site is so good. John K. Samson rules. And like watching a bunch of interviews with him ahead of this, like I want to hang. John K. Samson, come on the podcast.
Yeah,
come
man.
On Columbia's party.
I would love to talk to John K.
Every Samson. Time I see.
Talk to us about Neil Young or something.
Every time I see a famous person now tweet about albums they Columbia's like, I'm like, yeah, party. Come on.
I want to do, when we get like way deeper into this show, a debate episode on ranking the albums that we have done for Columbia House Party.
Okay.
I want to see if one can beat this for me.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if we'll get there. I mean, I know one way we can get there.
Yeah,
for you.
But that's cheating. So
yes.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Please try the fish.